Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And let's go right to our caller, Debbie, in Baltimore.
Hey,
go
Debbie.
Ahead, Debbie. Hi, how are you guys?
Good, thank you. How are
good.
You?
I'm good. I just spent the weekend making preserves. So we went berry picking and peach picking yesterday and got, 30 pounds of blackberries and 20 pounds of peaches.
Wow.
And
that's a lot of jars.
I have some blackberries left over.
Mm-hmm.
and I'm remembering a cake that we made when I was a kid, and it was a cup of blackberries, a cup of sugar, a cup of flour, a cup of milk, and I don't know the rest of it, that you cook in a cast iron skillet, so it's kind of a chewy blackberry cake. And I'm wondering if you can help me with the rest of the ingredients. Like, should I add egg, butter?
I was going to say, you're missing eggs.
You're missing eggs for sure.
Yeah, you definitely need eggs, and I'm wondering if you need some baking powder in there, too. So
yeah,
that's
baking powder, a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
how
maybe
much baking powder, like a teaspoon?
I would do maybe just a teaspoon. You have to be careful with baking powder because it can quickly ruin something if you have too much in. And then maybe, if you're talking about an 8-inch skillet, maybe I would say it's probably safe to do 3 whole eggs, maybe 4
okay.
whole eggs,
okay.
and give it a shot and see how it goes. I mean, it's a little bit like a cornbread recipe, so. You
may be missing a little bit of the bourbon that you would be macerating those blackberries in,
You're definitely missing
that. Some of that.
There you go.
I mean,
and for you.
Butter on this?
Did you say butter?
Yeah. Do we?
I wouldn't put butter in there.
No,
that's dangerous.
Okay.
Since we don't know what we're doing, I would not put the butter in.
Why don't you turn it out of the skillet and put a little bit of cold butter on? Good cold cultured butter on that guy.
And you didn't mention cornmeal, did you?
I didn't mention.
But
yeah,
I'd pop a little bit of cornmeal in there.
You could do a third to a half cornmeal.
I would because it's going to give it a great texture. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Have fun.
Great.
Good luck.
I'll make
sure.
it tonight.
All right.
Thank you.
Enjoy the fruits of your labor.
Don't forget to macerate those blackberries.
Yeah. Enjoy.
Oh, I will. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. So that reminds me of sangria.
Right. Oh my gosh.
And all of the things that because I can't I want to cook fruit, but I also want like
to drink some of it.
Yeah. I mean, yesterday I got this great ruby watermelon.
Mm.
And half of the thing went into the blender with just a little bit of lemon juice, just as with like sparkling water for soda pop.
Yeah, that's
it was
fun.
Crazy good.
Oh gosh, yeah, I love fruit.
But if it was later in the day, there could have been a little bit of very good silver tequila in there that might have made it both refreshing and relaxing as well.
Okay, so how do you make your sangria?
It depends on the fruit and the season that you want to use. She was talking about blackberries and peaches. That's very easy. You do need some citrus for acid balance. That's one of the things. And what you do is you kind of make, it's funny, I think of gazpacho almost the same way, because people want to make gazpacho with fruit as well. I think you think of sangria and gazpacho almost the same way in that you make a small batch that would be volume-wise, 15% of what the total is of whatever the flavor base is. And in sangria, it's a spirit that you start with. And usually it's brandy and then usually a liqueur like Cointreau or Grand Marnier or something like that. Something that a little bit of sweetness and a little bit of an extra boost of almost a deeper flavor.
That's the dangerous part of the sangria.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
A small quantity of that. Like I said, probably 15% of the total volume. You want this where it's the citrus fruit, a little bit of the macerated fruit. If you have any herbs in there, if you're using a spice, if you're using a cinnamon stick or something like that, and that's what you want to macerate with the liquor for a little bit of time, a day is ideal. And then when you go to serve it, I would put it into the glass or into the pitcher. I mean, you can make pitchers, but I think it's kind of fun to make them glass by glass.
Okay.
Have all your fresh fruit garnish cut. This time of the year, it could be those ginger gold apples that he has coming in pretty slices, white peaches. Fresh blackberries, all of those could be in the glass that you're pouring that almost like a cocktail base onto.
Okay.
And then serve, cold Prosecco on that, or have a mixture of two or three different wines that you pour on that. A slightly sweet white wine, say a little Gewürztraminer from Alsace.
Mm-hmm. That sounds so good.
And a little bit of a lighter red wine, a really light, easy Pinot Noir, something like
that.
So
are you meaning mix the red and the... Okay.
Absolutely.
Oh, cool.
Absolutely.
All right.
I will admit that a lot of times I like to make a very particular base and then serve it with one wine on top.
Okay.
Whether it's that Prosecco that I've mentioned or...
Yeah, I want to try it with Prosecco. That sounds awesome.
But now that I mentioned it, I've not done that with the Gewürztraminer in a very long time.
So with the Prosecco, you would still have the brandy and the Cointreau or...
Yeah, because you're making that base and that's the thing. And you get the lift and the freshness and the... from mm-hmm. from the bubbles that are there.
Okay.
And the bubbles especially, they act almost like more acidity. So if you're a little bit sweet in your base, and the fruit is sweet, the bubbles will help sort of offset that and keep that a little bit brighter and keep that feel more balanced.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. And gazpacho? You brought up gazpacho. We
should
talk
about
that. I did,
because I think about it the same way, where you kind of make a base. I was talking to someone through a recipe earlier in the week where we wanted to make a watermelon gazpacho because we were getting these great watermelons.
Mm-hmm.
And making the base with tomatoes and sweet peppers and a little bit of a hot pepper and very sweet onions and a little bit of herbs and very good vinegar and a little bit of olive oil, and letting that literally macerate for a little bit of time at room temperature, and then preparing the fruit mm-hmm. and making the puree of the fruit, and then adding that and pureeing that in. And so that it's, you know, but because you need all the seasoning, but when you hear watermelon gazpacho, you want it to be about,
of course,
the watermelon.
Sure, sure.
You know, and then garnish it with, you know, a little heirloom tomato melon balls or something mm-hmm. like that.
When I make gazpacho with tomatoes, heirloom tomato gazpacho, I use a variety, again, of, I mean, as many different tomatoes. We'll put maybe 5 or 6 different types. And we do, I think one of the most important things about doing it is grabbing all the juice from the cutting board. As you're cutting those tomatoes, you've got to get all that juice into your bowl. So,
why add
because
something
that's
else to make
foundation.
The soup?
Right, that's the foundation of the gazpacho. And I use fresh basil. I put a little bit of, a tiny bit of chive in because I don't put onion in. And I do a Parisienne scoop, which is a little like a melon baller. I have a little tiny one. And I do cucumber with that, so I peel the cucumber.
That's the most awesome thing about that.
Gosh, I love
it.
It's so yummy. And with the little cherry tomatoes and things, some of those are so sweet. They're so important to the mixture of the tomato. And also it gives you a little bit more juice because it's all captured inside of it. So I always put a very good extra virgin olive oil in as part of the foundation of the soup, and which is just a tiny bit, maybe a couple tablespoons for 4 portions. A little bit of kosher salt, freshly ground black pepper, but the herbs should really be added a little bit from the beginning and a little bit to order. And chervil is nice in there as well. I always add lemon juice and lime juice, and that's all it takes. But just make sure you're getting all that wonderful tomato juice in there. And that's something that needs to be made and eaten. It is really not something that, you know, you could probably make it a few hours ahead or maybe that morning for dinner, but really it's honestly, I almost prefer it when it's made right before it's eaten. And I garnish mine with a little bit of creme fraiche that has a touch of mild curry in it, and a piece of poached lobster, cold poached lobster. And I just put a little bit of olive oil on top of the lobster before it goes on to give it shine, and a little bit of seasoning, a little bit of salt. So that's
sure,
how I make
gazpacho. Lobster tastes incredibly sweet.
The other thing, it's so good together, and the curry kind of gives it a totally new feeling. The other thing, you were talking about watermelon, and with the ceviche that we do, I sort of modify it and make true ceviche when I use the watermelon with it. So I do rockfish ceviche with cilantro and jalapeno, red onion, or I'll use shallots sometimes, fresh lime juice, lemon juice, and a good oil and salt and pepper, and marinate the dice of rockfish. And when I mold it, I then do a brunoise of cucumber on top. So I just said cucumber and I meant watermelon, pardon me. So I do a brunoise of watermelon on top, and the flavor of that sweet watermelon with all that spice and acid and everything with the rockfish is so good. I love that combination.
Well, this is a very particular texture that's
soon.
Interesting with the fish.
Mm-hmm. It's really fun. So it's a good idea for home.
We do have an email from Fran who said, and I'm from here. I should have thought of this first. Here's another great old-time bakery that makes Baltimore peach cake, the Woodley Bakery in Bel Air.
Oh, good. Okay. Woodley.
So, on Bel Air Road. And so, are you up for a little live chef's challenge, a little
sure.
quick one?
All right. Yes.
A little quick one? You want to go? I did try to write this so that you could actually read it.
Okay, good. That'll make it a little bit quicker.
All right. We should put a timer on you of about 3 minutes or something.
Me? I usually do mine in about 30 seconds, so.
No. You get all elaborate.
Oh, right. Okay. All right. So I have red skin creamer potatoes. Apparently I have 3 pounds of them. Is that?
I try to give you some concise information.
How many people are cooking for?
I don't know. You invited them.
Oh, I have 6 whole quail. It has quantities. Okay, I didn't give you quantities.
I don't.
12 each, fresh apricots.
Just giving an idea what's important.
Fresh thyme, a small grouper, candy onion.
Sometimes you need a small grouper.
Fresh spring garlic, flat leaf parsley and basil, green tart apples, cider vinegar, aged sherry vinegar, one of my favorites, cherry tomatoes, and corn. Okay, oh boy.
I always hope that when you read these lists that you think, who is the lunatic that did my shopping?
Well, first of all, I love quail, and it's one of my favorite things to work with, and the quail is going to like the thyme and the garlic and the sherry vinegar, and the corn and the apricots. Oh boy, that's going to be good. So whole quail, I'm going to marinate it in thyme with a little bit of extra virgin olive oil, and I'm going to put just a tiny bit. I don't normally put acid in with my marinades, but I am going to put a tiny bit of the sherry vinegar in, and so I'm marinating it, a little salt, kosher salt and freshly ground black pepper. I would definitely marinate quail for probably 4 hours ahead of time.
You're going to bone out any of that quail or anything?
No, I'm going to grill them whole. So I'm going to grill the quail. I'm going to get really, really good crispy skin, good color, good flavor, good little bit of smoke. If I'm actually grilling them at home, I'm going to have a little piece of wood from my wood pile on my grill to smoke it a bit, close the lid, get it going. And those apricots, I'm going to wash them. I'm going to leave the skin on them, and I'm going to run them around on that grill while that quail is on there. And I'm also going to throw some more of the fresh thyme on the grill to kind of smoke it up, get the thyme going. And there's just going to be all kinds of great flavor going on there. Actually, I'm going to use the candy onions too. I'm going to throw those on the grill. They get a little olive oil, salt, and pepper, and they're going to grill with it. The garlic I'm going to smash, and when the quail comes out of the grill, I'm going to rub it on the quail just to sort of, I'm not going to eat it, but we're going to just flavor the quail a little bit, and also I'll rub a little bit on the apricots as well, which will be fun. And I'm going to make an oil with the extra virgin olive oil and a little bit of the sherry vinegar. And that's going to become a fresh sauce for the quail. And at the last moment, I will have already roasted my corn in the oven, in the husk. It takes like 40 minutes at 350 degrees. That will be cut off the cob. And what I'll do is I will just, one of the fun things about that sort of process is sometimes when you cut the corn off the cob, it actually stays sort of as whole pieces. And I think it would be really nice to actually roast the corn and take it right out of the oven and serve it. So I'm going to lay those sort of big pieces of cut off the cob corn on the bottom of my plate. There goes that sherry vinaigrette, my quail, my grilled onions, and my grilled apricots. And obviously we're discarding the thyme. And I'll either serve the birds whole or I might break them down. What's happening? You're shaking your head.
I wonder what the grouper's going to do.
Oh, well, I haven't gotten to that part yet. So the the grouper is going to get the apples and the cider vinegar and the potatoes. So those potatoes were already on the stove. They were being cooked very gently and delicately in water with salt. And in that pot, I'm actually going to put another piece of that thyme because I just kind of want that flavor to perfume the potatoes while they're cooking. Those will very carefully come out of that water. And once they come out of the water, I'm going to toss them with a heck of a lot of kosher salt that's going to really, really season those potatoes. I'm just going to keep tossing them around. The grouper will also be coming off of the grill. That will be my first course, and I would serve the quail next. So the grouper really loves butter and lemon in a big way. So it's going to get only a little bit of oil on the grill, but once it comes off, I'm going to squeeze fresh lemon juice. I'm going to make sure it gets a ton of butter on it, and I'm going to serve it with those beautiful potatoes, and I'm going to make a quick little cider vinaigrette. The cherry tomatoes will be in there with that. I'll use the basil and the parsley, and I did it. I used it all.
Yes. You used it all, and it sounds nice.
Well, thanks,
and you used all the time, so I can't turn my stove on. So,
oh boy, yours is raw.
My list includes figs, peaches, heirloom tomatoes, Iberico ham, goat meat. What cut of goat meat?
The saddle.
Perfect. Goat cheese, Spanish extra virgin olive oil, I'm guessing, probably arbequina, sea scallops, Maine lobster, lavender rosemary, honey, banyuls, lobster stock. Honestly, I don't have time to cook the goat meat remaining.
So it's going to be raw?
So No. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to slice that Iberico ham very, very thin. I'm going to put a little bit of the oil on it. I'm going to hope that I had a little bit of chives around. And those figs I'm going to toss with the oil and also chives. Serve it with the Iberico ham. And so because I'm way behind and have no time to cook, I'm going to lay that out for my guests and give them really good champagne so they're confused and don't realize I have no time to cook and dinner's coming
late. You haven't started your goat yet.
Right. The goat is going to be for tomorrow. We're going to get them drunk, and they're never going to worry about that. And I'll have time to go out and get the chickpeas that I want to stew with some of the heirloom tomato to make a dish for the goat.
Well, we'll catch you on the goat the next show, Tony.
I'm going to make a cold salad.
Something to look forward
with
to.
With the sea scallops and the Maine lobster, both poached in the lobster stock with banyuls. I'm going to dress it with the honey, lavender, a little bit of red wine vinegar, and a lighter oil, and lots of lemon juice.
There you go. Look how quickly you did that.
Yes, I gave them snacks and gave them too much cold champagne, and now they won't even miss the goat that I can't get to. That's all we have time for in Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf. Have a beautiful Sunday.
Thank you.